There is no substance on the planet that is as fundamental to life as water. Despite how important water is to every individual, life form, and living organism on Earth, too many take it for granted until it is too late. Access to clean water supply and sanitation services remains a huge challenge in Asia Pacific, with an estimated 500 million people in the region lacking access to a basic water supply and 1.14 billion people lacking access to sanitation. It's estimated that by 2050, more than half of the global population will live in areas that experience water scarcity for at least 1 month each year. Joining today's EcoBusiness podcast is Chong-Hin Ko, Vice President, Global Lifecycle Services Emerging Markets at water technology company Xylem, who will discuss the various water-related issues facing Asia and how climate change is exacerbating existing problems. We will also discuss the consequences of inaction from businesses, governments, and society, and how companies can do their part through leading by example. So thank you for joining us today, Chong-Hin.
Nice to be here with you.
I would like to just kick off this podcast with a question to set context for our listeners. So the United Nations estimates that water scarcity will affect half of the world's population by 2025. In addition to water security, what would you say are the most pressing water-related challenges facing our planet in the years ahead?
Yeah, so water scarcity, as you mentioned, is one of the most pressing water challenges. And especially in our part of the world, the Asian Development Bank already estimated that by 2030, there'll be a shortfall of 40% between water demand and water supply just in Southeast Asia alone. So just in our region, we already have this challenge, and in a global context, it's going to be a lot more serious. Besides water scarcity, there are actually three other areas that I feel we need to pay attention to. The first one being water quality. We are now seeing a lot more pollutants in our water supply, and this affects both communities and industries. Right, so a lot of the water in our region comes from either underground aquifers or from rivers. And already a study that the UN Environmental Programme did, they found that 80% of the river water in Asia Pacific is already polluted. And one of the very topical challenges today is the prevalence of a substance called PFAS. It's basically per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances. So these are chemicals that you usually find in your non-stick coating for your pan fryers. You find this in food wrappings. You find it in all kinds of products that basically prevents or is resistant to heat, oil, stains, grease, and water. So we have found a lot of these substances already in our water supply. And there are technologies available to treat it, but it is harmful to human health over the long term. The second other challenge that I wanted to highlight is resilience. Already by 2050, more than 200 million people will be displaced by desertification, sea level rise, and extreme weather events. And again, in our part of the world, we see a lot of that in the form of floodings, right? Floodings due to seasonal storms, due to typhoons, and a lot of people lose their property, lose their livelihoods, are displaced for a period of time, and it causes a lot of hardship and suffering, and also disrupts the education of a lot of the children. And the last point I wanted to raise is on affordability, because a lot of our water through our pipes, even after spending millions of dollars with treatment plants to treat the water, actually get lost. They get lost due to leaks. They get lost due to unauthorized usage. And in the end, all that money basically is going back down into the drain, literally. So 40 billion of clean water is lost annually due to broken infrastructure and unauthorized use. And if you look at events closer to Singapore, in Malaysia, they do have an urgent problem of non-revenue water, where up to 40% of the treated water they produce is lost through leaking or burst pipes. And they have recently decided to raise water tariffs in several states. They haven't done so in at least 2 to 3 decades. So now they are trying to raise water tariffs to pay for the work that is needed to replace old pipes or to find and fix leaks. So this is also one of the key challenges that we face.
I see. What is most difficult and complex about solving these challenges, though?
The irony of all this is that it's not difficult to solve, meaning that the technology is already there. The funding is there if we can tap on it. The willingness is there. It's just the focus, because many countries' governments are just focused and distracted by so many challenges of the day, right? There's also a need to build more infrastructure in terms of roads and highways, develop the economy. So water tends to take a back seat in many of these economies. So what we really need to do is to prioritize solving these global water challenges, recognizing that if we do not do so, they actually impede our eventual prosperity and economic growth, right? And it creates burdens on the health system when people fall ill when they don't have clean water to drink. More contamination of the groundwater due to untreated waste is then going to cause more problems down the road. So it's high time that all of us together, both the corporate sector as well as the governments, work together hand in hand to try to address or alleviate some of these challenges.
I see, I see. On that note, how do Xylem's solutions aim to solve these issues, and how important is the integration of technology in solving water-related issues today?
What we find eventually is that these issues are all interrelated. They are complex systemic issues, meaning we can't just solve one part of the problem and then hope that the whole problem will be solved eventually. So what Xylem tries to do is we have already accumulated a very broad, and I would say one of the leading range of assets in the world for water technologies. And then we are now put overlaying all this with a digital platform. So with digital solutions and technologies, we can now get our pumps, our treatment solutions, our monitoring and control solutions, and all that working together with a lot of data that we can now collect about weather patterns, about operating conditions, and so on, to then advise customers how best to optimize their current systems. How do you predict potential failures or potential one-off events like potential flash flooding that's coming up? And then how do we get the customers to prepare for it, meaning get more resiliency built into the system? And also, how do you inspect, how do you monitor and inspect that your infrastructure is in the right condition, that we put in the efforts now to fix whatever problems that may come up in the future, such that it doesn't cost us so much money when really things becomes catastrophic.
On that note, though, what are some of the consequences of inaction from businesses, governments, and society at large?
In the end, it's going to be a very big missed opportunity, because in our generation, as I mentioned, the technologies already exist, which means it's an opportunity today for us to invest in and to fix challenges that will affect our future generations down the road. And if we don't act today, we are basically kicking the problem down the can down the road, and then other generations will need to go solve these problems on their own. So first, it's a big missed opportunity. Second, we are going to actually inhibit a lot of potential. We have a lot of young developing populations in our region. They are all hungry for development. They are all educated, more and more educated, and they really want to do good things with their lives. But if we don't solve the fundamental issue of water, we are going to distract them. They're going to be focusing on where do I find clean water? How do I make sure the water is not contaminated? And so on. And how do I even go collect water or spend more money buying bottled water and worrying about more as daily essentials? Then we hold back the potential for development in our societies.
We would like to understand the larger impact of your corporate purpose. So I see that Xylem's corporate purpose seeks to help customers solve water through technology, make water more accessible, and to also create a water secure world. So would you say having a corporate purpose has led to increased business growth and fulfillment among employees? And if so, how?
Definitely having a purpose is important. And I would say all companies need to have a kind of purpose in what they do. That's the truth of what does your company really stand for and what challenges or problems are you trying to solve. So in our case, we are obviously very focused on water, and we have a catchy tagline called Let's Solve Water that embodies what we try to do. Right? And we are trying to solve water not just for the developed economies who can pay for it, but also for the people in less developed parts of the world where water issues are even more profound. How we have really benefited from having such a purpose is we have seen over the past 5 years at least, we have managed to attract a lot of professionals coming not just from the water industry, but from also other industries who want to make a difference, who want to feel that sense of mission and purpose, who want to really be in an industry and sector that affects the communities that they live around. And I do see a lot of professionals now, even myself. I'm not from the water industry. I came from aerospace, but I was drawn to Xylem because of the mission and the purpose. And then in the work that I do today, I can really see day to day how I'm impacting the lives and livelihoods of the communities that I serve. So that's one. Second is when people come to join Xylem, they are also inspired. They want to make a difference. So they're inspired to innovate. They're looking for new technologies, new solutions, new ways of doing things. And Xylem now has the portfolio that allows them to do that. So a lot of our employees are looking into our solutions and trying to put it together, package it in a way that works for the local context. They're also empowered. They're empowered to take leadership, make decisions, reach out to NGOs or customers or partners and say, hey, let's go solve this problem together. Are you interested? And we are going way beyond just what we call economic value, which is profits. We are actually trying to generate social value as well. We feel economic value and social value are equally important. And that's what our stakeholders expect from us. So when we do all this, we get a very nice, good virtuous cycle where motivated people come and join our teams. They in turn attract more motivated people to join them. We also attract partners who want to work with us and join the mission. We get a whole influx of new ideas, new ways of thinking. And then also we start to break down silos as we work on cross-disciplinary issues coming together. Then we can find employees in engineering, in sales, in customer support functions, all coming together to try to align and to work on the challenges that we are addressing. So that ultimately leads to a very impactful, self-reinforcing culture.
Thanks for sharing, Changhin. So, you know, beyond the business, could you also speak on the societal and also the environmental impact of your corporate purpose?
So we have tried to define this more clearly and even transparently. So we have published our sustainability goals. So for example, for our 2025 sustainability goals, we have actually outlined a few areas where we want to make an impact. Firstly, we said we want to deploy humanitarian aid to at least 200 areas affected by water-related natural disasters. This means deploying our equipment, our expertise, and providing support when there's a flood or typhoon, or earthquake or emergency. And so far, we have already provided aid to about 81 areas so far. The second area is we say we want to provide 15 million people with water education to improve their quality of life and to raise awareness. So we do invest, we send our employees out to communities to do water-related education, and we have already reached half of that target now. We already achieved 7 million people that we have educated and touched on education. And then the third thing we have published that we will do is to provide access to clean water and sanitation solutions to at least 20 million people living at the what we call base of the bottom, the global economic pyramid. So already we have provided such solutions to 9 million people around the world. And lastly, we said, look, we also need to make sure our own employees are engaged. So we have a target of having at least 95% of our employees in volunteer activities. And today we are already coming quite close to that target. So overall, we donate 1% of our profits to water-related causes and education. And that all really goes back into the community. So this is tangibly how we are impacting our societies. Yeah.
Great answer. So how can organizations determine a corporate purpose that works best for them and ensure that it permeates the company?
Well, this is not really a simple question to answer, because we have to, in the end, be very practical and real about it as possible. Because not every company works in a industry or profession where you can very clearly see the benefits of your activities. In our case, it's clear because water is a known and very public challenge right now. And then being in the water space is a very natural for us to say, look, our purpose is to solve water challenges. But there could be many other companies who are providing specialists in providing certain components or certain products that fit into a much larger scheme of things. And it's hard for them to then say, my purpose is to, I don't know, solve poverty or to alleviate hunger or to do that. So purpose can also be defined in different ways. One other good way to define purpose is on culture. How do we want people to experience working in our company? So if we define that as a purpose and say, look, people who work in our company will get the best opportunities, they'll be treated fairly, they'll be developed, their needs will be taken care of. That can also be a purpose. And the third way to think about purpose is also in terms of what competency do we really want to bring to the table that makes us different from all other companies. Maybe you will be the most efficient producer of a certain component or the most responsible and environmental friendly producer of a certain plastic, for example. So all that can also be embedded into the company's culture. In the end, I think what we need to do is to make sure that all our stakeholders, both internal and external, can relate to the purpose, can fall behind it and align with it, and then can go do it feeling that that's exactly what they are here to do.
So I see that you've worked at Xylem for close to 6 years. You know, what about water security and water scarcity personally moves you the most?
The best or the most moving part of my job is actually when I get the opportunity to go out and volunteer. And Xylem, we have a partnership with a nonprofit called Planet Water, where we build and construct water towers that will basically take water from underground or from other sources, filter it, and then it becomes drinking water. So we donate a number of these systems in different parts of the world. In my case, I've been to India, I've been to Thailand, to Vietnam. I've also been to Indonesia to construct these towers. And what always strikes me is every time the tower is ready and we invite the children to all line up to start drinking the water for the first time, you see the joy in their faces. Like they've never ever had clean water just out straight out of the tap before. They've always been drinking either boiled water or bottled water, or in some cases they are drinking contaminated water. So this for me is a very basic need that we all take for granted, especially in Singapore. But when you go out and volunteer and see how a simple solution like that can impact the lives of hundreds and thousands of people, you really feel the purpose coming back to life and you feel more motivated to make an even stronger impact.
It's very inspiring, Chong Hin. So on that note, how can companies and individuals do their part in being responsible when it comes to conserving water?
A few things we can do. I think just for ourselves, I think it's on us and it's our responsibility to monitor our water usage and adopt water conservation habits. Like don't waste water. Be aware how much we are using in our showers, appliances, and so on. Drink Well, drink tap water if you can, or boil the water, but don't get into a habit of buying bottled water all the time. Harvest rainwater. This can be used for washing and so on. So that's what we can do as individuals. In a context of a company, we can do the same for our offices and for our factories. Make sure we recycle water, make sure we don't use nice, clean, drinkable water, then you just use it to water the garden, just get rainwater to do so. And ultimately, I think what's more important is advocacy. We need to create awareness of water challenges, the importance. We need to socialize this. We need to make everyone aware that water is a basic human right, and so is sanitation, right? And then the more people are aware, the more they will demand for changes and improvements from their governments. They'll demand that water losses get fixed. They'll demand that waters get treated and do not pollute the aquifers and the rivers. Then we'll start to get a movement and we'll get momentum. So that's where I think companies need to do. We need to generate a whole movement of water advocacy that can then make a difference beyond our immediate communities.
Great answer, Changhin. So I see that Xylem was chosen as one of the National Volunteer and Philanthropy Center's Champions of Good in 2020. Could you speak on the significance of this achievement for the company and the challenges that had to be overcome to attain this recognition?
So in the past, when I joined Xylem, that was in 2018, we used to win every year the High Distinction Award with the American Chamber of Commerce. So that's really restricted to members from the American Chamber. And then in 2020, we decided to go on a national level. We said, okay, let's now go apply for this NVPC Champions of Good recognition and see how we do. The reason why we didn't really do that in the past is because we felt maybe we are still a small company. We look at all the big brand name companies on the list and we say, nah, we are nowhere near to them. So we didn't feel that we were in the same league. However, as we start to look at the things we were doing and we realized that, hey, what we are doing is actually impactful, right? It's actually doing a lot of good for the society. So we started to submit our citations to the NVPC, showed them what we are doing, and then we were selected. So this brought us up to the next level, where it's a national level recognition, and then suddenly we see Xylem's name side by side with many global MNCs from Europe, from Japan, from America, and then that even gives water a much bigger platform in terms of significance, because in the Champions of Good, it's not a water specific award, is to cover all forms of volunteer and philanthropy work. So now we have brought water technology to the forefront. And I think until today, we are one of the very few water companies in that program.
And last question for you, Changhin. How has the NVPC supported Xylem on its corporate purpose journey and in becoming a company of good?
Well, for a start, they do organize a lot of summits and events where they bring like-minded people together. And companies can share what they're doing. We have a view of who's doing what, we get to exchange notes and connect. So that's on one level. More recently, I personally took part in their inaugural or pilot program called the Chief Changemakers Program. So I was in a group of 10 selected people. We made a 1 week trip to Denmark. It was a curated trip. And during that week, we met many, many different Danish companies, both government, private sector, individuals, and also entrepreneurs. And then they shared with us how they are living out their purpose, why they were doing it, how they engage the communities. And that gave us a lot of very good ideas. And then now, back in Singapore, together with my cohort, we are actively trying to promote or champion change for our organizations. And that's been helpful having this network. So I've colleagues who are both from local companies, from MNCs and all, and we do meet regularly. NVPC also has many other programs like the Fellowship of Good program and developmental programs to start also building up the next level below us in terms of change agents. And hopefully, as this these programs run for a few years and we get more and more participants, I think we'll start to get a stronger cohort and pool of like-minded people who will want to make an impactful change in their careers.
I see. Very interesting answers. Is there anything else you would like to add?
The last point I wanted to add is actually the change process takes time. You really have to be out there and you need to lead by example. When I joined Xylem, although we had already established a CSR program called Watermark, I did sense that the employees were not engaged. They didn't see the need to do so. They didn't see how this related to their work. They thought this was a burden on their time. They felt like the non-profit or volunteering world is like nothing they've ever done before, is alien to them. So I came in and I started to encourage employees to join. I went on my own. I showed them by example how you can reach out to partners. We organized activities and invited them to join. Then slowly, slowly, people start to see that, okay, this is how it's done. My leadership is interested. Then the barriers came down. They started to say, okay, this is something I can do. I can do as well. I can see myself doing. And they started to feel engaged. And once they went for one or two of these sessions, they felt that, oh, it's really quite meaningful. And then they have a hunger and desire to do more. And then today, whenever we organize anything, we have a lot of volunteers. The employees are now very willing to spend their time to come volunteer. So it took us a few years to build up such a culture. But once you have it, then it's really self-reinforcing. So I would encourage all companies or all listeners to really start somewhere, and you will get there eventually.
Very interesting points. Well, thank you so much for joining today's podcast, Chonghin. It's been very interesting to hear more about Xylem, you know, how you view water scarcity in the region and, you know, what your company is doing about it. So yeah, I would like to thank you so much again.
Okay. Thank you, Jeremy.
This podcast was hosted by EcoBusiness, Asia's leading media company serving the region's sustainability community. Join the conversation by visiting eco-business.com, following us on social media, and subscribing to our newsletters. Thank you for listening.